This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 201 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max. Well, we're on to our next milestone. We're on to 300, I guess.
Onward and upward.
We had a good show last week, but we've got a lot of news this week. Let's see. Our topics are MIT develops gas, Verizon develops beyond visual line of sight, a grounded file, a 2.5 trillion with a T solution, FAA refunds, and some other news. So I think we probably should get started. What do you think?
Let's get started.
Well, our first story this week is from interestingengineering.com. I kind of like that name of that group. Yeah. MIT develops gas-powered UAV to stay aloft for 5 days. That's a lot of gas. I wouldn't want gas for 5 days. What do you think, Max?
It's a long-duration drone. They've envisioned this as being something that could be a temporary telecommunications service, particularly for things like disaster areas. And maybe even another application could be environmental monitoring. But this is a fixed wing, large one, rather large, 24-foot wingspan. It's got a 15,000-foot flight ceiling and carries about a 10 to 20-pound payload with a gasoline engine.
They actually rejected it being solar-powered. I mean, we've talked about persistent satellites, and that seemed to be the trend, you know, where the whole wing is covered with solar panels. But that was a little too expensive, so they looked at a small 5-horsepower gas engine. They developed a software modeling tool called the GP Kit to evaluate different aircraft parameters. So I guess they're trying to find the sweet spot of this little gasoline-powered airplane. I guess not little would be the term, but it's a very little engine, 5-horsepower kind of thing you would see on a radio-controlled airplane.
Yeah, SIPS gas, I imagine, which is part of the whole idea. This GP kit that you mentioned, David, that may be the most interesting development in this project, because what this enabled them to do is model in advance a lot of different configurations, different functions, different designs, and then evaluate the performance of the aircraft, given those parameters. So as an engineering development tool for creating drones, or maybe it's applicable in other areas, I don't know. It sounds like it's a pretty interesting thing that they've put together here. I mean, just imagine that you can run through hundreds or even thousands of different designs pretty easily using this tool. What a time saver, and what a way to optimize the parameters of the aircraft you're trying to design. So yeah, that may actually end up being kind of the big benefit to come from this project.
And the cost savings. You're not building things, trying it, and then fixing it and repairing it. So again, I guess it's one of those peripherals we've talked about so much that the peripherals now are starting to come up, where some of the new discoveries are things like peripherals, where in this case, a modeling kit via electronics. Not for me, though. I still prefer plastic.
Do you? Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting about them rejecting the solar power for this project. As I started to read about it and learn more about it, the first thing that came to my mind is, gee, gasoline-powered engine. We're really kind of would have expected maybe solar power here. But they had some practical reasons for rejecting it. One is, if you're going to use this in disaster areas, well, you need good light if you're going to have a solar-powered vehicle. And disasters can happen at any time of the day or night. They also mentioned the sunlight, the quality, if you will, of the sunlight, of course, varies depending on your latitude. And if you're close to the equator, you got some great sunlight. But as you, you know, head towards the poles, that situation changes. And so you don't have quite the recharging or, you know, power generation capabilities from the solar cells. And they note that in order to compensate for that, you'd have to carry a lot of onboard batteries, and that adds weight. So they decided to go with this gas engine approach, which, you know, based on that logic, makes a lot of sense.
And let's be honest, you're just disappointed that they didn't go the fuel cell route.
Well, well, hey, give them time. Give them time.
But it is kind of a go back to basics, keep it simple approach. You know, solar powers are modern technology, but have limitations. You know, a small gas engine can do the work of solar power. Good for them.
Yeah, and of course, they're not the only ones who are looking at providing a communications capability or internet capability from, what's the term we use for these?
Persistent satellites.
Persistent satellites, there we go. Because we know Google is looking at this and Facebook is looking at this, but so is Verizon, but with a little bit different approach.
They're out on the farm trying to, and there'll be more about that shortly. They are trying to make a flying cell site. And we've talked a little bit about this last year when we had here in Philadelphia, we had the Democratic National Convention and all of the cell towers that Verizon had to bring in. Here they're trying to make a flying cell tower, and they're doing it in good old Cape May, New Jersey, one of my favorite places. They're tested an AATI RS-20 fixed wing flying beyond visual line of sight. Now, they're allowed to do that because Cape May is part of the Virginia test site, and broadcasting a Verizon airborne LTE signal. And this is pretty much the similar comparison to what we were just talking about, except this is more about the technology versus the actual airframe.
Yeah, AATI, that's American Aerospace Technologies, Inc. And an interesting aspect of this test is that they were actually conducting tests with first responders. Again, the idea here is that when you need capability for communications on sort of short notice or in a location that maybe is remote, this is a way to deal with that. So we have this RS-20 fixed-wing drone flying, in the case of this test, at a lower altitude, around 2,000 feet, which just provided a simple quarter-mile diameter of coverage. But it was interesting that this is just one piece of the Verizon's toolkit, if you will, of ways to provide coverage, cell coverage. There's a number of others, some of these we've talked about. And David, they all have barnyard names. I think that's kind of funny.
What have I said about NASA? NASA or DARPA never miss a chance to make an acronym. So Verizon is following suit with Cell on Wheels, which is a
cow,
a generator on a trailer,
goat.
A goat.
A goat, G-O-A-T, generator on a trailer.
And a cell on a light truck.
Which, of course, is a Colt. So I think that's great. I don't know if they've got something similar for this airborne LTE approach, but they're probably working on on a barnyard name for that, too.
It's going to be a moving experience, you know, and they're going to, I'm sure they're going to somehow farm out some of the technology, you know, I mean. They don't want to fence everybody in.
Oh,
I can't wait till they get back to the barn.
Okay. Who do you think you are, Rob Mark?
Hey, it's my show.
All right. Well,
I like Rob. You laugh at my jokes.
Yeah, that's true. American Aerospace, it's an interesting company. They provide a lot of different kinds of products and services. But this RS-20 has an endurance of 10 to 20 hours, depending on the payload that it's carrying. Payload capacity is 75 pounds. That includes the payload and fuel as well. And, you know, I think, David, this is another gasoline engine powered drone.
Not a fuel cell? I thought it was a fuel cell. Maybe not. I'm getting fuel cells compared with telephone cells. My cells are getting mixed up.
Okay. Yeah, from looking at the photo, and it, I didn't find any specific information, but it looks kind of gasoline engine powered or combustion engine powered.
Or if someone from AATI would like to come on the show to talk about it, we'll be happy to have you aboard.
Yeah.
So we talked about the fact that Verizon was using real-world responders. Let's move to our next story about a You're Grounded file. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we had someone hindering first responders. This is from TheDrive.com. Drone operator near wildfire facing 14 felony charges, and he deserves 14 felony charges. Gene Allen Carpenter. And Max, why is it when you get arrested, always your middle name comes out? But Gene Allen Carpenter is 54 years old and should know better, but was arrested after flying his drone over an Arizona wildfire. He's charged with felony endangerment and unlawful operation of an unmanned aircraft. And they grounded the whole fleet of fire bombers because of what he was doing.
Yeah, this article mentions 5 helicopters were grounded, 8 air tankers were grounded, and also that ground crews had to be pulled since he didn't have any air cover, and so it wasn't safe for them to be out there. So you add up the 5, the 8, and the 1, and if my math is correct, you're at 14. So maybe that's where the 14 felony counts come from.
Yeah, but now think about this, though, Max. So you're talking about ground crews. So you're talking about fire crews, and they're usually between 5 and 10 people each.
I don't know if you get one felony count for the whole group or each individual. But in any event, there were some witnesses that observed him flying his drone around this. One of the pilots spotted the drone. And then, according to this article, the drone started circling the plane, and that's when officials decided, okay, this is going a little bit too far, and that's when all of them got grounded.
And of course, because people are really dumb, he posted pictures to his website, and that's how they figured out who it was. Bond was set at $25,000. I'm hoping that this guy gets some jail time because this was a real, he claims he didn't know any better, but I just can't feign ignorance on, because if he was capable of flying his drone around an airplane, he's a decent drone pilot. So he should have known better. So we'll have to keep following up on this. See if, they get charged. Interesting, though, it violated Arizona law, not federal law, because in Arizona, it's illegal for drones to impede emergency or law enforcement activities. So that's how he's being charged. He's not being charged with federal felonies. He's being charged with state felonies, which is interesting, Max. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the local law. I think they passed that. I think Arizona passed that law last year or about a year ago. And, you know, they say, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. I think we've reached the point where there's enough public awareness out there, and we need to set some examples. Now, we don't have the full details of the case, obviously, so maybe there's other extenuating circumstances or other factors at play here. But on the face of it, and as what's reported in the press, this sounds like a guy who should have known better violated the law. And so I think it's appropriate that he is charged. Interesting to see if he is convicted, what the penalty is, and if it does involve jail time or not. I guess it depends on the proclivity of the judge in this case. So, yeah, it'll be something that I think we'll all be watching.
And then we'll see if the feds get involved also.
Yeah.
I mean, that'll be the next step. So enough for the Year Grounded files. Let's talk about $2.5 trillion. That's trillion with a T. Corrosion problem solved by a drone and a Yale student. This is from inc.com. Yale student invents drone to solve $2.5 trillion corrosion problem. Interesting, Max. I think this is the biggest positive, most cost savings drone problem we've ever had come on the show.
Yeah, the $2.5 trillion refers to the costs associated with corrosion in pipelines and at oil refineries and that sort of thing. There is an extensive inspection system that the industry follows to, you know, ensure that you don't have burst pipes or cracks develop, things like that, for obvious reasons. If you have one of these pipelines carrying all of this oil or gas or what have you, if there is a significant rupture, you've got a huge environmental problem. So they invest a lot of money in inspections, and it's very labor intensive, and it costs a lot. So this particular woman at the Yale School of Management sort of saw that as a problem that maybe could be solved utilizing robotics and data analytics. So at the Yale School of Management, she and some others engaged in this project to create a startup. It's called Arix Technologies, A-R-I-X. And again, they're looking at a solution that's using robot vehicles to continuously collect corrosion data and then use data analytics to determine, you know, where the problems lie, and so some action can be taken. So the potential cost savings in this could be pretty large. $2.5 trillion, you know, that may be kind of an
hyperbole,
optimistic, but you can just assume that even with a, you know, aggressive estimate like that, nonetheless, you're talking about, you know, billions of dollars anyway. And if this is a great solution to that problem, then I'm sure Arix Technologies will be very successful.
Well, and even if it's not in monetary, but say it prevents a natural disaster on a pipeline,
yeah,
that would be worth. That's what we can always use the term priceless. If it prevents something like that. So it could, it's interesting that it's a good drones for good story, even though the headline is kind of hyperbolic or hyperbole. But it's not often you get to talk about trillions of dollars on this show. So we had to throw that in there. So let's talk about smaller amounts of money. How about that?
Yeah, about $5, let's say.
About $5. Or since you have to mail back a form, $5 less postage. We've talked about registration fees, and the FAA got told that they weren't supposed to be charging registration fees for hobbyists. Well, you can get your $5 back if you want to go exert the effort.
Yes, the FAA has let us all know that we have an option to do a couple of things with the drone registration program. So I know a lot of you listening registered. David did, I did, Drone Mama did, many of us did. Well, with the court ruling that the FAA could not require registration because it constituted any rule or regulation involving a model aircraft, the FAA's got all this money and the FAA has a registration database. So they now have a form, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes. There's an ability to fill out this form, mail it in. You have to mail it in, and you can get yourself removed from the registration database. In addition, you can get your $5 back if you wish. So what do you think, David? You think you're going to request your $5 back?
No, I'll be happy to let the FAA keep my $5. On principle, the fact that they got it all together and did everything right and did it in a timely fashion, I'll let the FAA keep my $5 as a tip for good work. I'm not personally offended that they want me to register my UAV. I know that there's a lot of people who are, but I was not so, and I don't. But if you are, if you want to get your $5 back, if you go to theuavdigest.com, we'll have a link to the form for you to download as a PDF so you can get your $5 back.
Or at least get yourself off the database if that's what you'd like to do. But David, similarly, my first reaction was, yeah, they can keep my $5. It's my gift to the FAA, and hopefully they'll use it wisely.
Wisely.
In looking at this, especially in looking at the form, I actually developed a second reason not to request my $5 back, which is that if you do want it back, what you have to do is you have to put in bank transfer information, your routing number and all that, in the form, because the FAA is only issuing refunds via electronic funds transfer. So you have to give them that information about your bank account. Now, I think $5 is a small price to pay for the federal government to not have my bank account information. I just assume not get into that database. So,
well, yeah, unfortunately, with the passing of my father and all of his federal stuff, they already have my routing and banking number, so it wouldn't bother me on that point. They've already got it. But it's funny, we've talked about personal identification and the current battleground now over voter information. This is one more aspect of privacy that we're going to have to deal with over time, because the FAA has got our information, you know, and I don't know. But like I said, if you'd like to do it, we'll be happy to provide a link on our page, and you can get there by going to theuavdigest.com/201. But let's talk some more FAA news.
Yeah, the committee, there's an unmanned
ARC.
ARC.
You know, we've had the animals. Now we're talking about the ARC.
Oh, good. Nice. That, of course, is the Aviation Rulemaking Committee. And the FAA creates these when they have a specific topic that they want to investigate, look at in more detail, and want to pull in some outside stakeholders in the process. And that's what we have here with the UAS Identification and Tracking ARC. And they've held their first meeting. It was actually held June 21st through 23rd, 2017. The first meeting of this Aviation Rulemaking Committee. Now, if you are interested in, well, what are the objectives of this particular committee, we'll have a link in the show notes where you can find the charter for the Identification and Tracking ARC. And there are really three items primarily that form the objectives for this committee. The first is identify, categorize, and recommend available and emerging technology for the remote identification and tracking of UAS. The second is identify the requirements for meeting the security and public safety needs of the law enforcement, homeland defense, and national security communities for the remote identification and tracking of UAS. They say here, in the charter, the ARC should consider and evaluate the need to provide information that could assist in threat discrimination and determination of hostile intent. So that's the second item. The third here is evaluate the feasibility and affordability of the available technical solutions and determine how well those technologies address the needs of the law enforcement and air traffic control communities. The ARC should develop evaluation criteria and characteristics for making decisions and rate the available technical solutions provided. So those are the three objectives of this particular committee. Membership is pretty extensive, David. I don't know if you looked at this list, this lineup of participants. I figured, what makes a good size for a committee? Maybe a dozen at most. Well, that's not the case here. There are 75 organizations in this committee.
But not the UAV Digest. When is the FAA going to learn? I did look. In all fairness, it's a compliment to the FAA that it's a broad, there's a lot of people who are stakeholders that will be able to contribute intelligently to this. I think one wonders that if it's that big, if they'll be able to productively come up with stuff, but it's an across the board spectrum. Do you agree?
Yeah, it includes a lot of the aviation alphabet organizations, the Airline Pilots Association, AOPA. It's also got the AMA in there, the American Association of Airport Executives, organizations like that. But you've also got companies like Rockwell Collins and Qualcomm. Verizon is in here. The National Association of State Aviation Officials, the Grand Forks Sheriff's Office, Fairfax County Police Department, DJI Technology, the Commercial Drone Alliance. It's a real cross-section. Almost every interest, I think, is represented. But if you're interested in seeing that, we'll have a link in the show notes to the list of participants. The last one in the list, because it's alphabetical, is X. I don't know who X is, or if they just ran out and that's an open position, number 74. I'm not sure, but they're in there as well.
So it'll be interesting to see what their next meeting is, July 18th and 19th. We're recording this on July 6th, 2017. Now, that gives them 12 days to invite Max and I so that we can participate and give them our feedback.
Don't hold your breath.
I could just hope. I know that there are FAA people who listen to this show. And they're going to come up with a finalized report or a recommendation report on September 30th, which is a good thing. It's not pushing it out too far, and I think that gives them some time to get the baseline set up. And I guess we'll see what happens after the recommendation. So we'll be following up with this. I'm sure that after the 18th and 19th, there'll be some news, so we'll be talking about that because we have to talk about the FAA at least once per show.
Now, of course, this article was about the first meeting, and so the question we haven't answered yet is what happened at the first meeting?
Coffee, Danish, shaking hands. I'm sorry, go on.
Well, there isn't a lot of information because, and I think for obvious reasons, the FAA is not going to give a lot of details about the progress of these committees meeting by meeting. All they said is that the ARC considered issues such as existing regulations applicable to drone identification and tracking, air traffic management for drones, concerns, and authorities of local law enforcement, potential legal considerations. FAA says the group developed some preliminary questions and identification parameters and reviewed a sample of existing identification technologies. So it sounds like kind of a, get organized meeting. Probably this next meeting at the middle to end of July will probably generate more concrete movement forward. But again, we'll probably have to wait until after September 30th when the final report is scheduled to be submitted to the FAA. And I don't know, or we don't know how long the FAA will We'll look at that report before releasing it publicly, but we'll be watching for that one.
It makes you wonder what their initial team building, introducing everybody's exercise was. Do you think they did the one where everybody stands in a circle and sits down?
I don't know. A circle of 75 would be a pretty big circle.
Pretty big. Well, okay. Well, but we know there was coffee and Danish involved. So, but we don't have a video of the week, but I'd like to give a shout out to another social media platform that I've been playing with, which is Instagram. Our Airplane Geeks, we have an Instagram page, but one of the Instagram pages that I found is called Sky Locals. If you go on Instagram and look up Sky Locals, they are a drone photography Instagram page. Still lives, some videos, some beautiful landscapes. And it just, they're new, and it just, I'd like to give it a shout out because there's been some really amazing drone footage taken. And so we don't have a video of the week, but maybe check out Instagram, instagram.com/skylocals.
Yeah, I just pulled it up, and yeah, these are some really, really nice photographs, really interesting stuff. Yeah, good find.
With that, I think we should call it a show, Max. What do you think?
Yep. And we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. Find us, as always, at theuavdigest.com. And because this is episode 201, you can go straight to the show notes for this episode. That's at theuavdigest.com/201.
And, of course, you can find us on social media, Twitter, at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can find Max and I on Wednesday mornings on the Airplane Geeks. And if you haven't listened to Airplane Geeks, I would say go back two episodes, or actually this week's episode. One of the important things you need to understand is we're going to be talking a lot about the FAA reauthorization bill and privatization of air traffic control. And it may not seem to you that it's relevant to drones, but it's a big deal and it will be relevant to this industry that we talk to here. So check out the Airplane Geeks. You can always send us some feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Check out our homepage at our convention pages. So maybe there's one near you that you can attend and then give us some feedback. And, of course, you can become a patron of the show or buy some swag at our Cafe Press store. So all of those links you can find on the show notes. And, of course, definitely check out our sponsors, who we appreciate immensely. So with that, I guess I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.